banged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine, and maybe just a little bit more.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. Dr. McCarty, it's good to see you again.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah, less than 24 hours ago, you and I spent a little time together.
We did.
Second segment, we're going to talk about that because this whole thing got very personal for me. And we'll talk about that in segment two. Let's start out. Packers got a big game tomorrow. Huge.
They do. The arch nemesis.
Oh, I know. And somehow Russell Wilson's going to beat him. I hope not. I hope not. But man, oh man. Hey, a couple of injuries I wanted to ask you about. We could probably do the whole show on Clay Matthews with the amount of injuries he has had. But they're saying now that his hamstring's getting better, but his shoulder, if you watch that game, he couldn't lift his arm up.
Yeah, well, what he has is an injury that's really common. This is the same injury last year that one of our receivers had.
Montgomery? No.
No, it wasn't Montgomery. I apologize for that.
It's okay.
He fell on his shoulder. He sprained his AC joint. Now, he says it was a cheap shot by a lineman. It hit him, you know, late. But in any case, the AC joint is a joint between your acromion bone. So if you put your hand on the top of your shoulder, you can feel there's a little kind of hard square bone on the edge of your shoulder. That's the acromion. That's part of your scapula or shoulder blade. And your clavicle or collarbone attaches to that area in what's called the AC joint. And so it stands for acromioclavicular joint. So when you hear these ideas about shoulder separations,
right,
AC joint injuries, that's what we're talking about. And this is where he injured it. And so even though this is not a critical structural part of the shoulder in terms of its function, it's really painful. And so it's very difficult to play and tackle people and hit people with an arm where you have this severe pain there. So I'm very confident that they put a local anesthetic injection in there, which we do sometimes for this injury.
Yep.
Because it's safe to play as long as the ligaments aren't completely torn. And I think that's what's going on. But it didn't work. So he still had a lot of pain there, and it was really difficult for him to manage. And that, you know, obviously the other team knows that, so they start attacking that area as well.
Sure. It's not like they're going to say, let's not hit him over there because it's injured. Do doctors on the sidelines know immediately the difference between something like that and a stinger?
Because
you see that a lot when a guy comes off and it looks like, right away I always think he had broke his collarbone.
Yeah, well, the difference between those three things is not, you know, they're all very similar mechanisms of injury. By the way, it was Randall Cobb that had this last year.
Correct.
And he played through it all year, he really limited his ability to go up and catch balls. But he was able to play, you know, but he just wasn't as effective. So you can't, you know, I hate to say that our guys would never push off to get open.
No, never.
No, but if
other
he did.
Other people do.
Yeah, other people do that. But if he was going to do that, it would be harder for him to do that with that arm. In this case, so like we talked about, the clavicle is attaching into the acromion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you transfer that load a couple of centimeters closer to the mid part of your body, you get a clavicle fracture. Okay, so it's not that different from one to the other in terms of how that happens. And it's actually better to have the AC separation than it is to have the clavicle fracture. If you had to pick, you know, not that you get to choose.
Sure.
But you'd rather have this one. The stinger is a really interesting thing. It's different. That's a stretch injury to the nerves that go underneath your shoulder in an area what's called the brachial plexus. Normally what happens there is you get hit, the shoulder gets driven down just like it would with these other injuries, but your neck gets stretched the opposite direction and it creates a stretch injury. I don't know if you've ever had a stinger, but I see them all the time when I'm covering football games and it's usually football, rugby. And what happens is the nerve goes completely dead. It's like hitting your funny bone with a hammer is what it is like.
Okay.
And the nerves are totally done. They don't work for a while. Because they're completely shut down. So nerves, work by electrical impulses. Mm-hmm. So when they get depolarized and the whole nerve fires like crazy, which is what happens when they get stretched, there is a short period where they don't work. And so the guys come to the sideline, they can't lift their arm at all. They have no power in the nerve. In a normal situation from a stinger, nerve recovery occurs within 5 to 10 minutes. And so normally the thing gets completely better. We won't let an athlete back on the field until their strength is back to normal. Again, if that happens in 5 to 10 minutes, then you can go back and you can play. We had an athlete just recently who had about 15 or 20 stingers and didn't tell anybody about it throughout the year. And he has some nerve damage from that.
Wow.
And so that's going to take probably several months to recover. And, you know, we're hoping that it recovers fully. But that's why it's important if you're an athlete out there, if you get these injuries, always tell the trainers, tell the doctors, even though you think that, you know, they're going to put you out. They won't put you out unless it's dangerous to you. So it's really important.
Yeah, and to follow up on that, there's an issue that I'm dealing with at where I'm coaching basketball, and young man, it's a high ankle sprain.
Yeah.
And he, I could see he's a young guy, and he was not exactly doing everything he was told to do. And I think he was trying to get back quicker. And finally, we had the conversation with him, the athletic trainer and I said, look, I know what your fear is. Your fear is that you're going to lose that you've lost your starting spot, right? And he kind of looked at me and I said, look, you earned that. You're not going to lose it because you have a high ankle sprain. You have to get back 100% though.
Yeah, right.
Whether it's 2 weeks or a week or whatever, when she says you're ready, don't be mad at her. You're not doing what you're supposed to do. But understand that that spot's waiting on you. You'll be okay, yeah. But you got to come back 100%.
You know, it's funny. This conversation is something that comes up in my office too, where athletes have to understand that if they play and they're really not doing what they're supposed to do to rehab and they're not doing very well, you know what? They kind of stink. And then they lose their starting spot.
So it's really
important to understand that all of us are there to help you get back faster. That's everybody's got the same goal. So in this case, you know, Clay Matthews is such an aggressive player.
Correct.
And he hits so hard and he goes so hard and people get on him because he has these injuries. And, you know, I don't think they understand that. I mean, look at the guy, the magnitude of force going through his body and what he's been asked to do. This guy's been a total warrior for our team for years. And, you know, he's getting double and triple teamed every game.
Every play.
And so, you know, personally, when I watch him play and I watch what he goes through, and I can sense, you know, when he's got injuries, you can tell when he's not 100%. But, man, I'll tell you, he's still out there. Now he's playing inside linebacker again, which he hates because he always gets triple teamed.
Right. And the guards
but he's
come
still
on.
You know what? He's still going to do it.
He will do it. Hey, let's get in a couple of minutes we have left in this segment. Nick Perry.
This is a bad injury.
Yeah, and for Mike McCarthy to come out and say it's a significant hand injury, because he doesn't say much on any of that. And the NFL Network reported that Perry underwent surgery for that injury. And a significant hand injury, I don't know if it's broken fingers or if it's in the meat of the hand.
I looked for that information this morning, and I could not find out exactly what it is, but it sounds like it's fractures in the hand or a ligament injury in the hand. You know, Mike McCarthy, I guess, is trying for the Bill Belichick Award for least forthcoming.
Always.
Because, obviously, the difference between significant hand injury and, what, insignificant hand injury?
Right.
It's kind of funny. Anyway, so, unfortunately, he's out for now. He may be out for the year. I know he wants to play. A lot of times at this position, they'll put them in a club cast and let them play if it's at all safe. But if the fracture is, let's say they put together a complex fracture, they're going to be really worried about him wrecking that and then maybe having a problem that he can't recover from. So anyway, they're going to be cautious with that, but he will not be playing this week, which
Correct.
Is a bummer for us.
Yeah, and you know what? Probably having the best year of his career.
No doubt.
The other one that I wanted to talk to you about is TJ Lang. He did some work in practice Wednesday. He probably appears to be at least a week away from returning, but he confirmed that he broke his foot against Tennessee on November 13th. So, what, a month ago, maybe? Not even quite?
Yeah, that's a four-week thing. So, foot fractures come in a very broad variety from stress fractures, metatarsal fractures, like the one that Kevin Durant had, and you hear about all the time, fifth metatarsal fractures. I suspect that this is one that is not quite like that, because a four-week return would be more likely to be something more in the middle. So, you know, it's encouraging that he's planning on coming back. Let's put it that way.
He was quoted as saying he's experimenting with tape and
orthotics.
Orthotics. Sorry about that.
Hey, man, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, well, I don't have my glasses on and that whole thing.
Wait till segment three.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not talking in that one. In his shoe, your thought on that, if either one can assist in getting him back to the field quicker?
This makes it sound like it's one of the metatarsal bones, which are the midfoot bones, in the middle of the foot, where using an arch support, using some tape to support it, is effective enough to let people play. And a lot of people play through that. We see volleyball players and other players play through middle metatarsal fractures until they get really, really painful. So that's not a dangerous injury from the sounds of it.
Well, let's hope the orthotics help.
There you go.
There you go. Like that?
Nice work.
Hey, dude, quickly,
phonics, Mike.
Oh, there you go. A couple of linebackers. Blake Martinez has a knee, and he's still questionable. Jake Ryan with an ankle. Looks like he's going to be back. He did participate last week, but boy, they're really banged up.
They are really banged up. And I'll tell you, the only, I guess, I hate to say it this way because I don't actually feel this good about it, but Earl Thomas's injury is a really significant factor in this game. Earl Thomas is maybe the best safety in the game, and he broke his tibia, so he's out for the year. He was talking about retiring. I don't think that'll happen.
I don't either.
Doesn't sound like he's going to need surgery. But it's a devastating blow for the Seahawks. Bad news for them. You know, good news for the Packer offense, well, because that guy is fantastic.
And what are they talking, 8 inches of snow, something like that?
Yeah, you know, I read an interesting thing about him. He apparently was laying on the ground, couldn't get on his leg, and he leans over to Richard Sherman and says, "Man, I made a great cut on that ball."
That's really
what he said, yeah. He wasn't even thinking about his leg.
And he couldn't get up.
He was so excited about what a great jump he made on the ball.
My goodness.
So, you know, adrenaline's pumping through these guys. It's a Warriors game, man.
Yes, it is.
They're tough guys. And this game will be fun. A lot of snow, real Packer Lambeau football.
You know, Packers had that last week, and they got a win, so hopefully it can happen. Hey, let's get to a break. Segment two, this show and everything we do in the show got very personal for me yesterday. And we're going to talk about what happened with my wife, Terry, and I yesterday and what she went through. And you were kind enough to work with us, and I want to talk about that process, if it's okay with you. And I know that you're never real comfortable with me throwing all kinds of praises your way, but I have to talk about you and the people at Mosh and the experience that my wife and I had yesterday, and we'll do that on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. In the bathroom. Band is English Beat, brought to you by Dr. Brian McCarty. Go to mymosh.com for more information on the fine people at Mosh. And Dr. Brian McCarty again, mirror in the bathroom.
Hey, we were going vintage yesterday, and I'll tell you what, these are some great bands. We were listening to English Beat, The Cure, Talking Heads.
That's what you're talking about when you said you're going vintage yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Had nothing to do with any of the patients.
Well, no. Not vintage.
I don't
on
be
the
talking
patients.
About my
no.
wife that way.
No.
Hey,
classic. So, classy, perhaps.
There you go. And she is. And she's
for sure.
She's tough. So let me tell the story, and we got Terry's approval to talk about this. And we did that both when we were in the room yesterday. I wanted to make sure that we weren't going to talk about something that we shouldn't be talking about. But I don't know, 3 months ago or so, Terry does a lot of work on the elliptical and she walks a lot. And she came down wrong on some stairs and she felt something in her knee and she's had an issue. So we came in to see you and she had a torn meniscus along with a few other things. And it's all fun and games until they put the gown on. I have to be honest. It's all fun and games. Everybody laughing. You'll be fine, blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you this, Dr. McCurdy. This thing got very personal for me yesterday. And it was almost like somebody threw, you know that commercial where they throw an apple at your head and you should have had a red apple ale? Like, it just, when I was in the waiting room, we on this show talk a lot about different patients. We don't name any of them, but this, you know, this guy had a shoulder or this guy had a knee. Well, now it was my wife having a surgery on her knee, and she had never had surgery before. And she's tough, man. And I never, when we talked about it, we met with you, I never saw any nervousness in her until yesterday morning. And her being nervous made me get a little nervous. And so we're going through this, and I have to first tell you that Kim, Jenny, Emily, and Barb are the four people that, this is an incredible staff that you have that work at Mosh.
I'll say they're what make the place so incredibly great.
For Kim, Jenny, Emily, and Barb. And I asked if I could write these names down because they didn't know me from Adam. They didn't know Terry from me. They were just a patient. They were so kind and caring, and they explained everything so beautifully that her nervousness went down in a heartbeat as these nurses came in and said, okay, hi, Terry, I'm so-and-so. Here's what I'm doing here. And here's what's going to happen next. And here's who's going to come see you next. And I can't, Terry said, make sure you thank them. So I'm thanking Kim, Jenny, Emily, and Barb for just really great care that you gave my wife yesterday. And then you came in and said, hey, how you doing? You've been in my house. This is my house right here. When you walked in scrubs and the hat, I knew you were coming in golf clothes, but I just didn't think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was then in your house.
Right.
And you know what? Dr. McCurdy, your house is great. Man,
thank you.
These are really good people that just care. If they treat every, and I'm sure they do, they treat every patient the way they treated my wife yesterday. I understand why the reputation that Mosh has is the reputation of just really good stuff.
Well, I want to thank you for that. But I will tell you this, that all we did when we created Mosh was we created a center where every single thing is centered on the patient. Okay, it's not rocket science. It's actually very obvious. But too often these days, it's all about numbers and people, you know, working on computers and pushing things. And it's interesting you say this because last night I had the opportunity that I don't have often enough. And I took a whole bunch of our employees out for a beer and some appetizers and things to thank them for being an extension of us, right? So all of us, the physicians who co-own the hospital, who run the hospital with now Ascension, which used to be Wheaton, you know, that's all we care about. When we bring someone to care, we want to make sure that everything is for them and that everything is done correctly for them, just as if it were us or it were my wife, right?
Right.
And I'm glad that it sounds like that's exactly the experience that you had. And most people who've been at other places, they notice this difference immediately. And just so that you know, Emily, you do know, she was on our show. She's the race car driver that was on our show.
Oh, she is. Yeah.
You wouldn't know that, right?
No.
But
I do know Emily. I'm sorry, Emily, if you're listening that I didn't.
No, she didn't make the connection either until later. But the thing is, look, for Terry and for you to feel nerves going into surgery is the most normal thing in the world. There is nothing, in my view, that is much more trusting than allowing someone to take you into a surgical suite and put you unconscious and then do whatever they're going to do. Like, if you don't trust them to do that, that's a problem.
Yes.
And so we understand that. And I always sort of semi-jokingly tell people that if you're not nervous before surgery, you know, there's something wrong with you. And if I'm nervous, you should run.
Right.
You know? Because, you know, we shouldn't be nervous and we should calm you down so that you understand what's going on. And so I'm happy that that's been the case.
And here's what I did. So I sat with Terry and then they took her and I sat in the waiting room and I observed and I watched as doctors came into the rooms to talk to the patients. And I watched as new people came in and talked to the people at the desk. And I just observed everything.
That's interesting.
Knowing that to do this show
right.
and to be able to say, hey, look, I'm not kidding. I know personally that this is a different experience than I had when I had knee surgery a long time ago, and I didn't know you guys. This is different, and I can't thank you guys enough. And I sat back, and I just observed everybody walking in and how caring the doctors were as they walked into those small rooms. One guy put his arm around the guy and said, come on, man, it went really well. Let's talk about it. And I thought, wow, this is why this is going so well. And when you guys say, hey, look, we care, it's all about the patient, it's centered around the patient, it really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
That is true.
Can we talk about the surgery that you did on Terry?
Sure.
It worked out really well, and I'll tell you that she slept well last night.
Great.
She got up. I got up at about 3:30, and I was literally just, because she slept in the living room, was kind of looking at her, and she opened her eyes. She's like, hey, how's it going? And I go, good. You need help to get up going to the bathroom? She goes, no, I went in, you know, an hour ago. I'm good.
Cool.
And I said, excellent. She said, yeah, I'm moving my feet. I'm doing this. I'm not crossing my leg. All the things that they told her, you know, to do, and she's a nurse, so she's following direction extremely well. She did say, hey, look, that pain, the painkiller put me out, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really made me drowsy. And I said, I think that's good. They told us, make sure around 7 or 7:15, just before everything's going to wear off, let's get ahead of that.
Yep.
And she had a good night's sleep.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, look, if you mentioned before that, you know, maybe to the staff or to us, that's just another patient. It's never true. You know, each person is another opportunity for us to try to do our best job to help somebody. And look, I've been a patient. I've been in that gown. I've been in that room. I understand what it feels like. And it's nerve-wracking, you know. But hopefully, by the time you get there, you feel like you're doing the right thing. And I think you know that we spend a lot of time trying other things.
Right.
Trying to make sure that that was the right thing for her. And it definitely was. There's no question. I mean, we did an arthroscopy yesterday, which for us is a fairly simple routine thing to do, but for her it's a big deal. It's, you know, and we know that. So
she's never been put out before.
Yeah.
Under like that. And she tells the story. She said, look, they were walking me in saying, look, it's going to be a little cold. She remembers that. And she remembers that she saw some people in the operating room. And the next thing she remembers, she was dreaming about Christmas. And somebody saying, come on. All right, Terry. Come on out, Terry. And she said, she kind of looked up and they said, okay, you're done. And she's felt a little bit of aching. But, man, you know what? So far, so good. We're just really happy. And I know I mention these names a lot, but she made me promise that I would continue to name Kim and Jenny and Emily and Barb. And,
well,
and certainly you, Dr. McCarty, you know, you did a great job with her. So thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. That's what makes us happy about going home every night and feeling like we've made a difference. And we translate that into this show, right? The whole point of the show is to try to educate people so they can make better choices and understand what options they have, what's available to them, so that they can live a happier, healthier, less painful life.
I learned a lot yesterday with the pictures that you showed me and then I showed Terry. I thought that once she had the meniscus tear, now it's fixed, she can never tear her meniscus again, but she can't.
Well, this is where you get into variability, right? In her case, you know, not to get too specific, but she has a lot of healthy tissue left in her knee, which is great. The odds of her having a tear are very low.
Correct.
But because we want to preserve as much normal tissue as possible, it is possible to re-injure it. It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
But it happens from time to time. And so, you know, one of the things we talk about all the time is, you know, I'm kind of honest to a fault about these things, but people need to know the truth, and we don't want to hide that. I mean, you know, it is what it is. I think she's going to do great. I think she's going to be fine. But, you know, we always tell it the way it is.
Correct.
You know, and
well,
some people have complicated issues. We treated a patient earlier in the day with a very complex knee injury. She's a very elite athlete. And you know what? I think she's going to be great. But we went through all the reasons that she's going to have to be more careful and it's going to be a little tougher recovery in the early going. Why that is makes a big difference to patients if they understand the reason why they're being held back or the reason why they have to do certain things. In my experience, having been doing this for over 15 years, people do better. They understand it. They relate to it. They understand the information. They do better with that.
Well, I appreciate you allowing me in this segment to say thank you and to say thank you to the great team that you have at Mosh, because now it's personal for me. And I've always loved doing the show, but I understand the show better now that we've gone through this. So from Terry and I, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Hey, we're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to talk about how you can replace damaged cartilage. And I've got some questions for you on that. On the other side, this is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Song is Discrimination.
Disintegration.
Disintegration by The Cure. It's perfect for today.
My wife
is listening.
Yeah, The Cure is appropriate, right?
You were the cure for her. So well done on that. Hey, we're going to talk cartilage replacement options in this segment. And I did some research, and I'm a big cartilage fan right now. It really is.
Everyone should be, Mike.
You really should be. Cartilage is, it is really important. And I don't know if it gets as much credit as it should, to be honest with you.
There's no doubt that cartilage is underrepresented in our society.
It really is. Do you know that it's up to 8 times more slippery than ice?
I did know that.
You did know that?
I heard that somewhere.
The ability to soak up and push out water as easily as a sponge.
Well,
see how important this research I do is?
Let me tell you something. For people listening, and we're sort of joking, because everyone has it, it's really important, and it's in all of your joints. The cartilage, just so people understand, is what's on the end of your bones at the joints. So your bones don't rub against each other directly, unless you have terrible arthritis, in which case you've lost the cartilage. And there are different types, but the most common one, the one we're talking about today anyway, is the articular cartilage. And that's the stuff on the end of the bone. It's supposed to be shiny, smooth, and white. It is incredibly slick. It has incredible properties, allowing a little bit of water, or what's called synovial fluid, to help the cartilage glide against itself. And if you think about it, when you're running around and pounding on it, like think of another substance that you could do that for 70, 80, 90 years and have it still work. I mean, it's an incredible and very complex structure. So we're not going to talk about every little detail about
Correct.
It, because otherwise we would be here forever, and I would never stop talking, which, you know, as an Irish person, it's hard for me to stop as it is.
Hey, no problem. You go, because looking at some of the stuff that I have, I can't pronounce half of it. So you just go ahead with, you know, the words that I can't pronounce, and we'll move from there. But when we talk about cartilage replacement options, repair is possible, right? If you're going to repair it. If not, when you're talking about replacement, What are the options that people have?
Well, this is a big topic, and one I think it's really pertinent to this show and to sports injuries. So historically, people that had cartilage damage in their joint, really the only options were to either A, live with it, or B, clean it up and kind of trim it out of there. And one of the things that I was interested in since the time I was a teenager, believe it or not, was doing cartilage research and looking at ways of regenerating this tissue. The reason cartilage is hard to regenerate is it's a very complex tissue that has very specialized cells in it called chondrocytes. And they're very hard to grow. They're not easy to make. And then even if you can make them, it's a very complex web that they live in. So it's not been something that's been an easy thing to crack. In 1994, when I was at the junior in medical school, the New England Journal of Medicine published a report by a guy named Lars Peterson. Lars Peterson is sort of a hero of mine. He pioneered the first cartilage transplants called our autologous chondrocyte implantation. And I said that so Mike wouldn't have to.
Thank you.
Autologous means it comes from you, all right? Chondrocyte are these little cells that are in the cartilage. And implantation, of course, means putting it into the body. And what he had done is he had grown these chondrocytes, which I did in the lab in our lab at the medical school, and then he had injected the cells underneath a patch. So he had taken the lining of the bone called the periosteum and sewn it over these holes in the cartilage, and then injected the cells. And what he showed is that you could create very nearly normal cartilage by doing this. Now, he was a Swedish doctor, so he was doing this in Sweden, and he did hundreds and hundreds of cases. And some of the most famous physicians today in this field, Tom Minas, for example, at Harvard, who I worked with, Brian Cole, who's in Chicago, who does a show just like this, by the way, I was listening to on the way in. He trained with Lars Peterson and Tom Minas and learned about cartilage regeneration. And so this has been sort of an issue that I've been interested in for my whole career. And we had a joint restoration suit, which we now have at Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital. So people who have these problems, if you're interested, you can come and visit with me or one of my partners, and we can talk to you about options for cartilage regeneration and resurfacing. Now, I'm interrupting you for a second because a lot of people that need a joint replacement, that need a new knee or a knee replacement, will come in and they'll say, well, I heard that I can get my cartilage replaced. It doesn't really work for that issue. Okay, it's really, imagine a pothole in the road you can fix, right? So if you have a hole in the road, you can put new asphalt in there, right, and you can make it level and you can repair that and you can have a great road, right? If the whole road is destroyed, like, for example, the zoo interchange.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. You need a new road, and that's where joint replacements come in. So people shouldn't look at a knee replacement as a failure or a hip replacement as a failure. It's actually, these are the two best operations that have ever been created for that problem, ever, literally. They increase people's function better than any other operations. But if you're young and you have cartilage damage that's pretty significant, and you're too young to get a new knee, then these procedures are really, really helpful. And that's what I wanted to talk about today.
What is the procedure like? What, you know, is it, yeah, is it a long procedure? Is it a short procedure? Is it?
Well, there are different ones.
Okay.
So for really small holes, if you look at your hand, if you look at your pinky fingernail or maybe the ring fingernail, holes in the cartilage that are that size can be treated arthroscopically. So that arthroscopic means we're just putting little poke holes in there. We're looking with a camera inside the joint like we did yesterday for your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can make little holes in the bone there and stimulate healing. So we can actually stimulate some of the marrow cells to sort of form a clot over that. And that turns into a type of cartilage called fibrocartilage. Okay, you hear about microfracture surgery in athletes all mm-hmm. the time. You're hearing about it less. Have you noticed that?
And that's because of this.
That's because it often doesn't work. Okay, so it works temporarily, but then the cartilage damage progresses. So the problem with microfracture is it's only really suitable for small defects. When you get into bigger defects, you get into much more complicated issues. So then you have other options, like this autologous chondrocyte implantation procedure. Now, that procedure typically needs to be done as an open procedure. It's not a huge incision, but it needs to be done open. And what you do is you basically suture in a patch, and it's much more like plastic surgery than most orthopedic surgery, and it's very delicate, time-consuming, and very meticulous. Now, I happen to kind of like that sort of thing because it's rewarding when the patients do so well afterwards, but it's difficult, and so a lot of people shy away from it. Well, I've done a lot of these over the years. The biggest issues with that is two surgeries. You need one surgery to harvest the cells because, remember, you're taking your own cartilage cells. You're growing those in a lab, typically in Boston. There's a special lab that grows them, and they're not easy to grow. And then you literally are implanting millions of these cells. Like, I mean, they take, you know, several thousand, and they multiply them into millions. And then we're implanting those under this patch and letting them grow into cartilage, okay? So that's maybe an hour and a half procedure, which for me is a long time.
Sure.
I'm pretty efficient. So, but the recovery period is progressive. All of these require a motion machine to kind of help the cartilage heal. And then there's progressively adding weight bearing so that you gradually start to stress the cells. It's kind of interesting, right? So
right.
You don't think of cells as being like these things, but if you stress them at an appropriate level, they gradually will start to make all the stuff that you want them to make. So they'll start making collagens. They'll start making proteoglycans. They start making all these little bits and pieces that actually make cartilage. And so as you heal and it matures, you keep adding more stress, more stress, more stress, and you gradually back till you're back to full activity.
Right.
For even bigger holes, then we get into what's called OATS procedures, osteochondral allograft transfer system procedures. These are when we use donor tissue. So I would encourage every person out there to sign your donor card if you haven't, because you never know. Somebody might really benefit from your misfortune, or, you know, and I know it sounds horrible,
right,
but the fact is every patient that I treat with this, I remind them of that. Somebody gave themselves to you and let you do that. And so we actually take cartilage and a little bit of bone, and we make a perfectly sized implant that fits the defect. Okay, so not to be confusing, but if there's a big hole in the cartilage in the knee, we can create a new piece that fits exactly there, and then we implant that piece, just like putting a plug in.
It's amazing. It's just amazing.
And then that can grow and heal, and if it heals, now you have new cartilage. And it's pretty cool. You know, it's not simple. It's not without its issues, right? Because you're using someone else's knee to do this. But I'll tell you what, it can be really life-changing. And if it works well, it can be long-lasting, and it can stave off or prevent the need for a new knee.
And we need to get to a break, but it when you said there is some downside, it can reject, your body can reject it.
Yeah, it's rare, but it does happen. Or it cannot heal, you know. So these are difficult issues. They're not simple issues to deal with. But the fact is we've never had better issues. And when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about some of the most exciting things to come around in a long time. Things that some of us, like me, have been waiting for a long time. So you don't want to miss the last segment.
Well, and you've got it. Dr. Lars Peterson is, like you said, a hero of yours. Is he still around?
You know, he's still around, but he's not practicing anymore. But I had the pleasure to take him around for about a week when I was a fellow in New Zealand. So I did my fellowship in New Zealand. I'm actually rocking my New Zealand All Blacks rugby shirt today. But he came to visit with Barry Titchens, who is my mentor as a fellow. That's what you do after your residency training, because we don't get enough training, you know? That's a joke. I did a year of sports medicine over there, and he spent a week, and I drove him all over the place because I was the fellow. And it was just incredibly fun to have an opportunity to interface with someone at that level and get to know him as a person and realize what a great man he was, I suppose.
Sure.
And how much he moved the needle forward. And that's what we're always trying to do, kind of move things forward and be safe, do the great things for patients, but also move things in the right direction.
He is Dr. Brian McCarty. Go to mymosh.com for more information. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. This one I like. 1 in 10, UB40. We got a music lesson from Dr. Brian McCarty during the break. Now, that's a great story about this band, by the way. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, if you guys don't know UB40 except for Red Red Wine, you should go check out their early work. It is fantastic.
You're a big fan.
I'm a huge fan.
Hey, let's. We only have a couple of minutes here, and we want to finish up on some of the things that we had talked about in segment three. And one of them, we talked about a couple of things when it comes to cartilage and some of the unbelievable work that's being done right now. But there's two, the stem cell injections we have not talked about.
Yeah, so these are things that I wanted to bring up because people hear about them on especially on the news a lot now with athletes talking about what are called PRP injections and stem cell injections. And I just wanted to sort of touch base on this. So the future of our field is biological. Okay, so historically, orthopedics has been a mechanical-based field where we're mechanically realigning things, we're replacing joints with, you know, metal and plastic, we're using plates and screws to fix fractures, and we're still going to do all that stuff, by the way, because it works. However, the future is cellular, learning how to make cells do what we want them to do and learning how to make them do it faster and more efficiently. And what does that mean? That means taking these cartilage problems and healing them and making new cartilage. taking a fracture and healing it in 2 weeks instead of 3 months, you know, this type of stuff. And that's why support for research and stem cells and all this stuff is really important, because, you know, you just had your wife had a procedure yesterday, and you know how nerve-wracking that is. Well, in the future, that could be your granddaughter or
right.
your
grandson.
And,
yeah.
and you're going to want them to have the very best options. So research is the key to that. So people, please support those things, because they're really important to all of our futures
right.
and our health. When it comes to these injections, PRP injections is platelet-rich plasma. What that means is taking your own blood and spinning down platelets. Okay, now why platelets? Because they're filled with growth factors. These growth factors can stimulate the body to heal. Now, on the flip side of it, I can tell you that the science behind this, although intuitively makes a lot of sense, is still premature. So you're hearing a lot about this, and people are getting all these shots and all this, and sometimes it makes sense. There's good data. Sometimes it's overutilized because it sounds really trendy and cool. The other thing is they're not covered by insurance, so they're expensive. Now, we do them, and we do them for things that we have data that shows that they're effective for, and we offer all of these treatments. So if you're interested in getting PRP injections or stem cell injections, you can contact us through Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital and my partners. I won't even go through the list, but we all offer these options for you if you would like to have them. But we will counsel you about what works and what doesn't. Stem cell injections, mesenchymal stem cells. These are not embryonic cells. These are your own stem cells. These are sort of the latest trendy thing. These are very expensive. They're $4,000 to $5,000 a shot. They do not, so far, actually regrow cartilage in your knee.
They do not.
But some people find that they have helped their symptoms, and they are options for people to explore. More to come on this topic.
More to come. Yeah, and I took the second segment away from some of the other things we were talking about.
Because all right, we'll do it again.
We'll do it again. Again, to Kim, Jenny, Emily, and Barb, Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for the kind work that you did with my wife, Terry, yesterday. Dr. McCarty, again, I can't thank you enough. Sorry, and
you're
she
welcome.
Was in
and
great hands.
Your wife is delightful, which is not surprising, because you're not a bad guy yourself. You
thanks.
Know?
She outkicked her coverage a little bit, don't you think?
She's so lucky to have
she's
you, Mike.
She's so lucky yeah. to have me. I agree. Mrs. Big Time Mike McGivern, she won't go by that. Doctor, I'm sure I'll see you before. If I don't, Merry Christmas to you and your family.
And to you as well.
Thank you. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.